Today's presenter is Charlie White. Charlie is a software engineer with application and integration middleware technical support. IBM Software and has been a member of CICS Level 2 support team since 2003, where he specializes in CICS web services. Prior to his role, he has installed and supported CICS in a variety of customer environments. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Charlie.
Thank you, Elijah. I'd like to start by welcoming everybody to this WebSphere Technical Exchange presentation on KICS and web services. As I was researching and writing this presentation, I realized that the title sounds somewhat negative, Problems and Pitfalls. I mean, how encouraging is that phrase? But as you'll notice from this title page, my job role is as a Level 2 support person for KICS. I guess you could say my viewpoint is somewhat slanted because of that role. After all, when do we at Level 2 support hear from our customers when there's a problem? That's right, with very few exceptions. We just don't hear from our customers when everything's working well. But despite the problems suggested by my title, the KICS Web Services story is, I think, a very positive one. As they say in journalism, it's a story that has legs. It's also a story that's still being written. There's still a lot of opportunity here that our Herdley Labs are continuing to take advantage of. And after all, the web services infrastructure is continuing to develop. So beyond our own implementation, this is an industry story that you'll find will continue to grow, to mature, and to become more than it is today. If we could go to the next slide. On page 2, we have a list of the acknowledgments, some of the trademarks and the logos that we'll be using in this presentation. And now turn to slide 3, please. Here's the agenda for this session. We'll quickly review this. We're going to start with a brief review of web services overall. That is, what it is, why it's important, and where the trends seem to be taking us. This presentation is intended to focus on the problem areas customers have encountered in their implementation and exploitation of web services. There already exist several excellent write-ups and discussions of KICS's specific support for this technology, so we won't be going into a lot of detail. However, in order to frame and make sense of the problem areas I'll be discussing, it will be necessary for at least a high level of understanding of the KICS implementation. So we're going to spend some time after the industry perspective talking about that specific implementation. Then we'll talk a little bit about planning your approach to CICS web services, how to get started, and some general recommendations specific to the host KICS platform. Next, a discussion of common problems and some hints to help identify and resolve those errors. Finally, I'll talk about various types of diagnostic information that we typically request at Level 2 support for those times when a simple diagnosis is elusive. Slide 4, please. So, in our introduction to web services, what exactly are web services? Well, they're built on, or they're comprised principally of service-oriented architecture, which talks about packaging business processes as services. It's a style for creating and using those services. It's not a particular implementation, but it also forms the basis of web services. Jim Ryan, who's a distinguished engineer here at IBM, wrote a white paper called SOA in the Mainframe Software Environment, where he says that it's defined by standards and equally accessible to individuals and small and large enterprises. It's the best solution we have today for application construction. And in a sense, it levels the playing field. Now, web services specifically consists of clients and servers that communicate using XML, and they follow the SOAP standard. World Wide Web Consortium describes it as a software system designed to support interoperable machine-to-machine interaction over a network. Now, the basic idea with web services is that this represents an open architecture for application-to-application communication. The key point is that there's an application on each end, not a browser, and they're designed to work regardless of platform or language that each application might be written in. XML is used not only to communicate between servers and their clients, it's also used to define and describe the web service being provided in the form of a WSDL, or a web services definition language. This generic XML definition allows a web service to hide the implementation details of the service so that multiple loosely coupled applications can be joined and leverage your application investment. This is especially good news for a platform like KICS, since it often houses such a large investment in terms of solid legacy applications. Okay, on to the next slide, please. Slide 5. A little bit more from Jim Ryan. He talks about the value of being able to reinvent and reuse mainframe code worldwide for our customers is in the tens of trillions of dollars. This is going to be a huge industry, and we're really still at the leading edge of it. Numerous Gartner reports tout the benefits, and you can review some of these reports on the Gartner site. They discuss in an article back in July of 2007, web services showing steadily increasing and widespread adoption of the technologies, but modest deployment. There was another article in October of 2007 that talked about some of the healthcare implications. There's been little adoption so far of web services in healthcare. However, the results at Duke University Health System show great promise using this architectural style for application integration. The view from KIX Level 2 support seems to support what we see from the industry perspective. Although the technology is still relatively young, it's a very promising approach. It's beginning to make some serious gains. Okay, on to the next page, please. Slide 6. Here's a quick review of some of the history of KIX as it relates to web processing. Now, I'm not going to go in detail over this, but you can see the different releases of KIX Transaction Server as they've been released and where we've added support for various web-related facilities. The slide talks about how KIX has been enhanced in recent years and, in a sense, re-architected to allow their applications, to allow people to re-architect their applications without necessarily requiring an extensive rewrite. The web services story in KIX had an initial introduction when the SOAP for KIX feature was introduced in 2003, and it gained a strong foothold in 2005 when we provided the most visible enhancements in version 3 of KIX Transaction Server. On to slide 7, please. Okay, I'd like to talk a little bit more specifically now about the KIX implementation of web services to provide a meaningful orientation as we move toward a description of the problem areas that customers have encountered. The chart up now illustrates the tooling support available for KIX Web Services implementations, also known as the Web Services Assistant, or WSA. This is offline support as opposed to the CICS online environment. The tooling described here can be supported under ZOS or really under any platform that will run the Java programs that provide the WSA support. We'll begin with an example that assumes we have an existing language structure illustrated by the LS in the scroll box in the top left-hand side of this chart. Now, this would be a language structure such as a COBOL copybook, and it would match your existing business logic, for example. The copybook is supplied as input to DFH LS to WS. That's language structure to WSDL. And this now will generate a couple of artifacts. First of all, it's going to create a WSDL that reflects the data elements described by your copybook. This is the XML equivalent of the COM area that you're trying to enable. The CSS tooling would also create a WS bind file located at the middle bottom of the chart, which is effectively a KIX-specific representation of this service. These artifacts are the equivalent of a web service resource. Now, that really just describes the left-hand side of this chart. If you now turn your attention to the right-hand side of the chart, you'll see that we also provide a mirror approach through the DFH WS to LS, or WSDL to language structure conversion program. This will use a WSDL to generate a compatible language structure along with the WS bind file in the middle. Now, generally speaking, the approach on the left is typically referred to as bottom-up and usually applies to situations where you're trying to externalize an existing KIX application as a service provider, since you're starting with an existing language structure that's presumably associated with an existing application. A top-down approach is indicated on the right side, as your CICS application would typically be the service requester in this development scenario, headed outbound to an existing web service provider. However, there are no hard and fast rules here. Most commonly, the client side that's calling the web service will have been given the wisdom that the CSS tooling generated. What I'm trying to draw out of this chart is the offline tooling that now will support your runtime CITS web services environment. And we're going to get a little bit more detail into those charts coming up next. So turn to slide 8, please. This chart is meant to illustrate how the different artifacts and resource definitions interact within a CITS region. So let's look at how the WS bind file feeds into CITS's runtime support. We pick up where we ended on the previous slide with the WS bind file, which now on this slide you'll see the top, a little bit towards the center, I guess. The resource definition that ties this all together is the pipeline, which consists of a fixed format pipeline definition along with an XML config file definition stored as an HFS file. This file basically defines how messages are to be treated that arrive on this pipeline. So in particular, it will define what level of SOAP you're using, whether you're using web services security, whether you're using web atomic transaction processing, and whether you expect any different processing if the message arrives on MQ instead of HTTP. CITS provides a number of these handlers for you. Our SOAP support is implemented as one, and WS security support is implemented as a different handler. However, the handlers don't actually say anything about the specifics of the application. The reason for this HFS file, the one that's defined associated with the pipeline, is that the structure of the data we need to express in the config file is too freeform to fit into RDO. So for one thing, it can be an arbitrary number of handlers that you're going to run, and RDO doesn't do very well with modeling arbitrary lists of things. It needs everything defined fixed. Everything to be fixed up front. The pipeline configures an arbitrary number of handlers to run. Generally, you'll find that this is just one. You'll see a little bit more about handlers on the next slide. Now, pipelines provide the infrastructure. We're still on slide 8. Pipelines provide the infrastructure to run web services in. There's potentially a many-to-one relationship here. You can have many web services hosted in a single pipeline configuration, and in fact, the typical customer deployment appears to match this approach of relatively few pipelines specifying how the messages are processed with many more web services, which are the applications that they're actually enabling. Now, there are two ways to get a web service into a pipeline. There's a static install and a dynamic install. The static is just basic RDO where you say this web service belongs to this pipeline. The dynamic one is a model similar to EJB, where there's a directory to put the bind files in, and CICS will dynamically generate the web services resources for you. The dynamic install is illustrated here. When you either install or request a new scan of a particular pipeline, the CICS will read that pipeline definition along with the config file and all the WS bind files from the web services binding directory that you specified in your pipeline definition. These are combined to create both a URI map, which is how the outside world gets to find this pipeline, along with a web service definition. To make life easier, web services installed dynamically get the URI maps generated dynamically. Now, on the next slide, we'll put these CITS resource definitions into context by looking at the runtime view. But let's switch to slide 9 now. This is an overview that shows KIX acting as the service provider. The next two charts, the provider on this chart and the requester on the one following, are a bit busy, but they're meant to illustrate the processing flow for KIX. This first slide shows an overview of KIX processing when it acts as the service provider. The broken lines represent the tooling support that creates that infrastructure supporting your web service, which were discussed on the previous two slides. So part of the reason that I wanted to draw that out is that this slide is so busy, I want to give you an understanding of that offline, the tooling support that plugs into the runtime support, which is also illustrated here. Now, the four big technologies used in web services are WSDL to describe them, SOAP is the most common messaging format and protocol, HTTP, which would be the most common way to move those messages around, although we do also support MQ, and XML as the actual structure of those messages. there are a number of additional specifications, many of which continue to evolve, which add all sorts of extra features to existing web services capabilities. But to look at the flow now, if you look at the resources that you use in your KIX region as a service provider, we have tooling support on the left, the resources defined in the middle, and the runtime in the gold portion on the right side. Effectively, you would start at the bottom left corner with the language structure, which is the language structure or container that matches your existing business logic. We've already discussed the tooling support for that and how the resources are created in KIX. Now let's take a quick look at how a web service request is processed by KIX. A service requester sends a SOAP message in. This arrives at the socket's listener on the TCP/IP service that you've opened. That socket's listener, the CSOL transaction, will be defined as just an HTTP service. So at that stage, there's no difference between a web services message and a normal HTTP request to KIX. The CWXM transaction, which the HTTP code runs, will attempt to do URI matching. The URI map points to the pipeline that it's associated with. At that point, since we know it's a pipeline, we start up the CPIH task. This is the HTTP dispatcher task, attached when the transport is HTTP, which quickly starts up the pipeline and runs some number of handlers. Typically, we drop through to a SOAP handler, and then data mapping and the business logic is called. As you can see, the web service resource information is used during that stage. The web service itself defines where you find WSBind files in HFS. You will have one of these definitions for each program that's enabled as a web service. Once the SOAP message comes through to the data mapping, in most cases, the business logic will want to send a reply, and the whole process runs backwards. So we go back through a data mapping to get some XML. We rerun all the handlers in the reverse order that you configured to do whatever they do on the way back out, and the message goes back out. However, we do support one-way messaging in KIX Transaction Server 3.1, so sometimes you get a special class of web services that only get messages in. That seems to be the exception from what we've seen. Okay, so that's our overview of KIX as a service provider. Next on slide 10, a view of KIX as a service requester. Now this should go a bit quicker. If we look at KIX as a service requester, many of the same resources are still there, but it's slightly simpler in some ways. Notably missing from this slide are the TCP/IP service and URI map resource definitions, which aren't used when CICS is the requester. In this case, you've got some user transaction in KIX that's going to make an outbound web services request. So the business logic sits at the top layer. We normally expect that business logic to represent the data in a way that's natural to their application programming style, so either as a comm area or as a channel with a collection of containers. A web service resource can be used to provide the data mapping between that way of representing the data into XML and back again. And the most common way to make calls out of KIX would be to do an exec KIX invoke web service, specifying the web service resource that you want to use. Part of that would be to run a pipeline to send it out, and in this case, it's a requester pipeline instead of a provider pipeline. But again, it's effectively a sequence of handlers that need to be called to process the message on the way out and then on the way back in again. Okay, so that's it for our overview of KIX web services processing. On the next slide, slide 11, we're going to start talking about some general strategies for web services implementation. First of all, and you're probably not surprised to hear this coming from a level 2 support person, but we strongly recommend that you check your maintenance. You know, especially in the web services area where there has been so much development, not only in terms of some code fixes, but also in terms of enhanced function and additional capability, even between the releases. There has been a lot of work done here. It's not wise to skip over this. You're just going to end up reinventing problems. The next general strategy is to ensure that you have sufficient data set access for the appropriate web services related resources. Often we find people running into problems with their HFS files with appropriate access to WSBind, the pipeline config file and the WSDIR directory. Next, you should also consider the case-sensitive parameters, since case is sort of starting to reach out of its legacy area, if you will. It's beginning to talk in a web world, which is more case-sensitive. And as an example, where that's infiltrated KIX is in the URI map path parameter definition. Lastly here, consider using the validation option. Now, this is specified in a web service definition, and it can be defined statically in your web service resource definition. Now, generally, I think I would recommend using the dynamic web service resource definition approach that we discussed a few slides earlier. However, you can still use validation in that scenario. After you have dynamically installed your web service, you can use CEMT to dynamically modify that web service definition, specify validation. Also, as a note, validation is not something we recommend for production use, as there is a significant amount of overhead associated with the additional level of validation that is invoked with that that parameter. Okay, on to slide 12, please. In implementing your web services support, you need to be aware of the published requirements and the limitations. You're going to find this in the KIX manuals and in the Info Center. But in particular, you should pay attention to the code page support that's required, the PL1 support requirements that have to do with the parsing of XML and KIX's own use of PL1. Also, the requirements with regard to the IBM SDK for ZOS, Java 2 that's required for the tooling support, and the IBM XML toolkit for ZOS version 1.7. Now, the current available XML toolkit is actually for ZOS version 1.9. However, we do have a release-specific requirement for 1.7. The good news is that the 1.7 module that we require, the module sets that we require, are included in the 1.9 distribution. So to adhere to that requirement, you can download the 1.9 XML toolkit and then just install the 1.7 components for that. In addition, the limitations associated with web services, KIX complies with the WSI basic profile and adheres to all must-level requirements, but it does not specifically implement support for UDDI registries. Now, although KIX doesn't specifically implement that support, a recently released support pack, CA1N, enables web service description language files to be derived or that are derived from KIX application interfaces to be automatically published from the KIX ZOS environment to WSRR, that's the WebSphere Service Registry and Repository, where they can be accessed by other web applications. The support pack also enables retrieval of WSDL files from WSRR into the ZOS environment, where they can be modified and reverse engineered into new CICS application high-level language structures. The code consists of batch utilities similar to the current KIX Web Services Assistance and a new KIX transaction. So that may be something that you'll be interested in having a look at. Now, WSA, the Web Services Assistant, and the associated runtime are not fully compliant. That is to say, limited support in the mapping of certain schema, and that's documented in the CICS manuals. The mappings between high-level language data types and web services descriptions are not symmetrical. They're logically equivalent, but not identical. Now, what that means is that if you start out, let's say, with a language structure, and you run that through the DFHLS to WS tooling to create a WSDL, then it'll create the WSDL as well as the WS bind. If you take the WSDL output and now feed it through the mirror tooling support, that is DFHWS to LS, it will create a language structure. However, that language structure is not guaranteed to be identical to the language structure that you originally fed in at the beginning of this process. They'll be logically equivalent, not necessarily identical. Lastly, in terms of limitations, the current transport protocols that we support include HTTP and HTTPS, along with WebSphere MQ. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, additional details from the Info Center. There's quite a bit of information about the relationships, the requirements for COBOL and XML schema mappings, the limitations involved there. And so I encourage you to have a look at any of these topics that might apply to your environment, the COBOL and XML schema mapping, the C and C++, or PL1 and XML schema mapping articles. There's also some discussion in there about how variable arrays of elements are handled. And lastly, you may want to consider, and this really isn't particular to web services, but more with changes that occurred at CICS TS version 3, you may want to consider your socket close no recommendations, where previously we did not recommend using socket close no. And because of some changes in kick processing, that's perfectly reasonable, acceptable, and in some instances, maybe even encouraged. Okay, and next slide, please. Okay, on slide 14, our recommendations. Number one recommendation, use the sample. Now, we do provide a working sample web service application with CICS TS version 3.1. It's called the Catalog Manager application. It's fairly simple and straightforward to implement, but it does also provide a very meaningful, I think, and practical illustration of web services use. Frankly, it will help you to install this. It will help you not only to better understand, potentially, web services and how it works in your environment, by being able to see and work hands-on with a sample application that is known to be a working entity. It can also help you in terms of validating that your web services infrastructure is set up properly before you move on to your own applications. There's a quote down there from the CICS Information Center, and I won't read that to you. You can read it yourself, certainly, but it is strongly recommended. Certainly, a number of the calls that we've gotten in at Level 2 support have been problems that I think easily could have been avoided had the person that was calling been more familiar with web services through the sample. So this is, you know, it's really for your benefit, for ours as well. Make sure you cover that ground before you try to tackle bigger projects, as it were. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, next up, for the web services assistant, there are some maintenance issues that you should consider. Now, typically with CICS maintenance, for example, if you go to a new level set and you're going to modify some of the runtime CICS modules, those modules are updated in your running libraries. Next time you bring CICS up, it's going to be running with those that more recent maintenance. The story's a little bit different with the Web Services Assistant, with this batch tooling. Now, with the batch tooling, at certain maintenance levels that introduce new mapping levels, in order to take advantage of that new processing capability of performance improvements and additional coverage capability, you do need to specify a mapping level parameter when you run the Web Services Assistant. Those mapping levels are listed in the chart there. Unlike the other CICS maintenance, they're not automatically incorporated, so you have to override to specify, for example, mapping level equals 1.2 if you're running CICS TS 3.1 at the more recent maintenance levels. Now, the caution is advised on the second sub-bullet under the main topic there. Says, as this may result in unintended changes to generated artifacts. And the reference really is to allowing customers to keep all of their generated web services tooling at the same mapping level. The thought being that there may be some dependencies or interdependencies between various web services that you're creating for your applications. Now, in actual fact, I've never come across anybody that's run into these sort of conflicts. But it is something to be aware of. Generally speaking, we strongly recommend for compatibility purposes and for capability purposes that you run at the highest mapping level provided by your software maintenance. Next up, for the Web Services Assistant, we also would encourage you to verify that you're using the correct input parameters. And as an example there, it's invalid to specify a program name for a web service requester. After all, when you're the requester, you don't determine the program that's being run. You send your request off to somebody else who determines in his structure how he's going to reply to that web service request. And once again, never gets old, do be aware of your case-sensitive parameters. Okay, next slide, please. The next tip-up was actually a pretty nice performance improvement that we found, that by overriding your KIX Web Services Assistant JCL to specify, if you will, enhanced or improved LE configuration parameters, we've seen some significant performance gains. Now, in fact, the web services tooling is something that people, pretty much run just to enable their application. Once it's up and running in a production environment, you don't go back and rerun the web services assistant. However, with some assistant runs taking 45 minutes and longer, any sort of performance improvement that you can see here is generally positively received. There are some additional details about that performance improvement that are noted in this tech note, 1249544. And I have the sample URI listing for getting to the tech note. And if you would, any of the tech notes that I refer to in this pitch, if you just overtype the last seven numbers in that string that I have, everything after the SWG2, you can display any of the tech notes that are actually referenced here. Some of the other common problems that we see in deployment have to do with some of the WSDL and WS bind errors that come in. These are deployment errors that often relate to unusable WSDLs, unsupported features, or WSDLs that are just unable to install, be installed, or a web service that can't be installed. So as far as the unusable WSDLs, this is something, once again, at level 2 support we see quite often. Some customers will attempt to modify by hand their own WSDLs, which is fine if you can do it right. We encourage you to use a WSDL-aware editor. And more to the point, before we can really consider problems with your WSDL, we need to see that the WSDL is something that could be validated by outside tooling. In other words, if your WSDL isn't valid outside of KIX, certainly our tooling isn't going to be able to make it valid for you. We provide a substantial subset, but really still just a subset of available web service capabilities. And that's indicated in the second bullet, the unsupported features. The unsupported features are well documented in the CATS manuals, but we are continuing to develop and to remove those unsupported features as we move forward and see more and more of our customers using the web services technology. Now, back to this last bullet here, if you're unable to install a pipeline or web service resource, it's kind of interesting that just because your install completed doesn't necessarily mean that it was successful. So after you've done a pipeline install, we'd recommend that you use CEMT to inquire against the status of the appropriate resources, your pipeline, as well as web service, URI map, and even your TCP/IP service to make sure that they're in a state that you expect and usable. For diagnosis of any problems where you cannot make your pipeline usable, typically we have a look at the messages in your CATS logs, and often we'll look at the trace of the install with the pipeline domain, PI, specifying trace options 1 and 2. So generally, if customers use a schema-enabled editor, you'll be able to avoid a whole raft of potential problems with invalid XML, which will cause installation errors when you try to install the pipeline. So it all kind of feeds together. Next on slide 17, please. Surprisingly, one of the areas that we've gotten a number of calls, and actually I think these calls have trailed off a bit, but we have heard from a number of customers that have tried the first time to access their web service through a browser. And as I mentioned earlier in this presentation, web services and browsers don't really mix. That is to say, a browser doesn't understand how to talk in web services. This is program-to-program communication, not HTML display technology. And so you have to have an intelligent program on one side that understands the format of the parameters and the format of the call, the request that it needs to send to your web services requester. Trying to send a web service request from a browser just doesn't work. Some of the other runtime problems that we see, sometimes response time is longer than expected. One of the areas that we've seen frequently is that this can be caused by TCP/IP delay act parameter. And if this is a problem for you, you can code no delay acts on the TCP/IP config statement. Now, for example, you can define that on the entire for your entire TCP/IP network, but you can still override delay acts for specific port range, begin route, or gateway statements. There's more detail about this no delay acts parameter recommendation in TechNote 125.0026. Next, the DFHPI 0602 message really is an example of one of the messages, the error messages that we might see in trying to use web services. The text of the message, the CICS SOAP handler failed to parse a message. The parse error is, and an error code will be listed. The KIX SOAP handler program uses the PLI, PL1 XML parser to process the contents of the SOAP message. A parsing error generates this message, and it can be diagnosed using PL1 error message codes. And once again, more details are in TechNote 126485 reference there. Okay, on the slides 18, please. Some more runtime problems that we've seen. In data conversion errors, after the application of APAR PK23547, we may be issuing one of the following messages. This was an enhancement, actually, for additional diagnosis, DFHPI 10078, 9, or 1010. The possible causes here are an invalid SOAP message or an out-of-range value as defined by your WSDL. And a detailed diagnosis assistance can be found in our tech note number 1211424. Okay, slide 19, please. We talked about this a little bit earlier. It's insufficient HFS access, data set access. An example showing an error in trying to access a pickup shelf directory in a pipeline definition is shown in that first bullet. And next up, a corrupt WS bind file. The message typically we'll see there would be a DFHPI 0914. Something to be aware of and something that we've seen sort of as a common thread here is that if you've generated your WS bind file on a distributed platform, for example, RDZ, you need to make sure that you transfer the file to ZOS in binary mode. The file that's created by the RDZ tooling creates a binary equivalent, basically, that would be used directly by CICS. So you just need to make sure when you FTP, when you transmit it, that you keep that in binary mode. Okay, slide 20, please. Next up for problem investigation, makes sense to have a look at what other people have reported. We're starting to get more and more history, more and more experience with web services through our own customers' implementations. And you can see a lot of that documented through IBM ServiceLink, APARs, PTS, and other technical information through software defects. But also there is a wealth of information. I strongly encourage you, if you haven't seen it already, to have a look at the TechNotes troubleshooting and FAQ notes that we've published. We have a team of people spending a lot of time, not only the level two folks, but also people really standardizing the messages and making them usable for our customers. And hopefully that's of some benefit to you. We're adding content all the time, and I would strongly encourage you to go out to our website, www.ibm.com/CICM/T-Server/support, and do a search on whatever problem or whatever implementation that you're interested in, and you're bound to find some information documented or referenced out here. Okay, slide 21. Now, the tools that we use for problem determination, some of the artifacts or some of the output that we need to see if we're diagnosing particular problems, if you encounter problems in the Web Services Assistant, the WSA, with your deployment, typically we want to look at your job output as well as the log file. Now, there are actually a couple log files associated with the WSA. There's an HFS error log file that you name in the parameters that you run the WSA with, but there's also a log file that is printed to sys out in the bash job that you're running. So typically we would need to see both of those. Now for the runtime errors, most typically we need to see the CICS messages from the job log and from message user. Your trace, either internal or auxiliary trace. Most typically, and once again, this would depend on what type of problem that you've run into and where you're encountering that problem, but very typically we'll ask for all trace levels at trace 1. In addition, the domains listed there, AP, EI, PI, SO, PG, and XS at 1-2. We need to see very typically a CICS system dump, though once again, that depends on the nature of your problem. And the containers that we have a look at actually through the dumps and the traces that you provide. Now, the information shown here is also discussed in the Must Gather document, Documentation for Web Services Problems in CICS on ZOS. This is a tech note that you can find on at the site that I referenced on the previous pages, and it's also included in the reference information at the end of this presentation. Okay, next page, please. On slide 22, here are some of the techniques that we use in problem determination. First of all, for WSDL validation tools, and I talked about this or referred to it a little bit earlier when I was talking about the support that Level 2 would give you for a WSDL that will not run through WSDLS tooling, for example. There are publicly available WSDL validation tools. Both RDZ and Eclipse, which is actually a freely downloadable shareware platform, both of those platforms will provide WSDL validation capability. Now, limited to just WSDL formatting, you can actually bring your WSDL up in Firefox to have a look at the indentation, the sort of a pictorial display of the text describing your WSDL, your definition language. This is sort of one-off from WSDL validation, and I'd really encourage you to look at the Eclipse tool or RDZ tooling to do your validation. However, if you're trying to read your WSDL to get a better understanding of what the service is that you're providing or requesting, Firefox can be used to assist with that formatting. Now, in addition, some customers have found some use with the CEDX transaction. CEDX is very similar to CEDF, but it's intended to be run for non-terminal associated transactions. So, for example, with CEDF, where you would specify the transaction CEDF space and then the terminal that you're monitoring, with the CEDX transaction, the parameters change a little bit. You use the transaction CEDX space and then the transaction that you want to monitor. So, for instance, CPIH or CWXN, the next time one of those non-terminal-oriented transactions runs, an EDF session will start at your terminal and allow you to monitor that transaction process. Okay, slide 23, please. where to look for diagnostic information. You need to check all your error logs for messages related to the error that you're encountering, and we talked about this a little bit. For the tooling support, the WSA, you'd want to look at your job log, the sysprint in the job, the HFS error log that's specified by the log file parameter in the WSA parameters that you supply. And in the runtime support, typically you're going to look at the CICS system log, message user, and if necessary, dumpster traces. Okay, next slide, please. Slide 24 for a summary. We've taken some time to talk about the history and the implementation of web services under CICS TS 3.1. We've described the techniques and resources for KICS problem determination, reviewed some categories of some of the commonly reported problems that we've seen, and made some recommendations to help you to avoid some problems. Now, there's an extensive list of references following this summary, and if we could go to that next slide, 25 now. Slide 25, please. Okay, so for our first set of references, in the CICS Information Center, and I've listed both the 3.1 and the 3.2 website for the IBM-hosted CICS Information Center, some specific recommendations would be to have a look at the information roadmap that talks about web services, and that includes both internal IBM and Information Center references, as well as external references to web services-related topics. Now, additional details are available from search results, which is very comprehensive and useful in the Information Center. And then, of course, the manual, CICS Web Services Guide, that has quite a bit of detail about web services specifically and the Catalog Manager sample application in particular, including implementation and operation. And there's a list of some red books there that may be very useful. I won't read all those titles, but I would point out in particular the Implementing CICS Web Services has some very good examples. And an excellent appendix that includes some sample handlers that you could include in your own web services testing. The other one that I would recommend is the Application Development for CICS Web Services is also a very an excellent red book. And then, of course, the CICS Transaction Service Support Site listed at the website listed there. Okay, on the next slide, 26, please. Here are some of the external references for the specifications involved in web services processing. You can have a look at the SOAP specification at the website listed there. WSDL 1.1 is used, and there's a reference to that specification, and XML 1.0 at the W3 location listed there. You can also check the KICS Information Center under the external standards topic for a more extensive list and for current references. Now, just to help people, and I realize that for some of you that have been working with legacy apps and KICS for many, many years, a lot of this stuff is really still new topic and new technology and just still trying to get your hands around it. And I found Wikipedia to be useful, not really for technical information and for diving deep, but at least for sort of a general breadth understanding of some of these different topics such as SOA, SOAP, web services, and WSDL. The Wikipedia articles seem to be very approachable and usable. Okay, next slide, please, 27. I've listed some of the tech notes and frequently asked questions. Some of these I've referenced in this presentation, but these may all be very useful for you. I've included a link to a pitch that Steve Webb gave last year on an introduction to CICS Web Services. So it spends a little bit more time talking about the artifacts, talking about web services support within KICS without really so much support or so much attention to the problems and pitfalls, that additional information that we've sort of gathered over the last couple years of using this. So if any of the web services technology, if you feel like you need a little bit more background, I'd recommend that you have a look at that pitch, and you can still review both the audio and the presentation itself. There's a nice tech note on how to read a WSDL that gives some instruction and some information about XML and about WSDL and what's required. The must gather information for web services problems that I referred to earlier. There's an article out there about testing CICS web services, which actually takes the Eclipse platform I was talking about using earlier for WSDL validation. Well, you can also use it when you've imported a WSDL in Eclipse to test that web service. And that tech note actually describes that process, describes with screen snaps how to do that. And finally, some discussion of how you can generate or customize the generated WSDL out of LS to WS. There are also several very good Z Journal articles on KIX 3.1, on web services capability, on some of this new technology, and certainly worth a read. Okay, next screen, please. Here are listing of some of the additional WebSphere product resources. Really without specific regard to KIX, but just more generally WebSphere topics. And with that, I think we are about done. Next slide. Yes. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to do my best to help and answer those for you. So, Elijah, I'll turn it back over to you now.
All right. Thank you, Charlie, for a great presentation.
And we'll take our first question from Mike Valentine with Geico.
Yes, the Web Services Assistant, using channels and containers.
Yes.
Is there a way to generate right now it looks like it, the way we do it is the Web Service Assistant assigns a default container name and then some unintelligible channel name. Is there a way that we can have control over that when we generate? What I'd like to have is a WSDL mapped to a container and have a name, another WSDL mapped to another container have a name, but both of them are using the same transaction, which would be the same channel.
Okay. I haven't seen that. I'm not sure if we have that capability, but Mike, I can certainly research that for you.
Sure.
Yeah. I'm tempted to say that we don't provide that capability. I don't recall seeing that. But before I give you a definitive answer, I'd want to check a little bit deeper.
I'd appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks.
Once again, as a reminder to everyone, that is star one if you have a question today. We have another question from Scott Crane with Metropolitan Life.
Yes, hi. Most of the examples that I've found on the Redbooks and others, whenever they do a CICS command, there's no error processing in case there's a CICS error. How do you process CICS errors as far as returning messages back to the calling service?
You said you looked at the red books and you didn't find examples?
Most of the examples I have, they process CICS commands. And if they do check a response, they more or less say if the response is good, then do something else. They don't seem to do anything as far as other than a bending. If there's a CICSA, can't find a container, it bends. I can understand that on certain containers like, the DFH data container and those kind, but
mm-hmm.
on other CICS commands that you might be processing, like, you're putting your own containers or anything else, how would you go about, returning an error saying, this CICS command abended, so that the development team can, look into the problem?
Well, now, are you talking about issuing a message to return, I guess, to the requester?
Yes.
Okay. What you want to do is to generate a fault. I think it's a write SOAP fault. And then the client SOAP application would have to handle that.
Okay.
But the I guess web services architecture, if you will, and we provide for this capability, would call that you would actually create a SOAP container to hold that fault information.
Now, if you create SOAP fault within your application, does that override when it goes back in the normal response
that would be returned?
I'm not sure what it does to the response. Okay. Apparently, yes, it does. And thank you, Darren.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Once again, everyone, that is star one if you have a question today. We'll take another question from Pat Gwynn with Geico.
Hi. With the web assistant, when we run the ls to ws, it'll build a log, a WS bind, and a WSDL file. And is that WSDL used by CICS or just a WS bind file?
Actually, it's just the WS bind file that's used by KIX.
Okay, so... But also saw that when we install the web service definition, it'll pick up that WSDL, I believe, out of the WS bind file. It'll pick up the directory path for it.
Yes.
And why would it need to know where that is?
Okay. The WSDL is actually used by KIX, but only in the event that you have validation turned on. So if you have validation activated, then KIX needs to know where to find the WSDL.
Okay. And what does validation do for you?
Validation does a much deeper check, and by using the WSDL, it actually validates the web service that you're trying to communicate with. Or that's communicating with you, I guess.
Is that just to make sure they match up?
It's to make sure they match up, to make sure, I think, data types, bounds, it's a much more thorough checking.
Okay. Without validation, does it still check for a date and time stamp? Because we've had issues where we've had to, discard and reload the web service. Because the timestamps will be off. If we run LS at WS and the region's up, then we have to discard and reinstall the web service to get them in sync.
Right.
So that's something you do need to do.
I don't think I understood the question. I'm sorry.
If we run the web assistant while the region's up and put a new WS bind and WSDL out there.
Right.
It won't be usable unless we actually reinstall the web service.
Right.
That's correct.
I believe that's correct, yes.
Okay.
Because otherwise you still have those artifacts within KIX. You'd need to recycle or to reinstall it.
Right, and that'll reload that WS bind out into the pipeline
right.
structure.
Right.
Because that's where it looks like no matter where we put the WS bind file in the structure, it looks like there's a WS bind copy that gets installed at startup off the pipeline.
Right.
Okay. And then do you have a recommendation as to how to move the bind files if you don't share DASDY from one system to another?
FTP is a nice way of getting that across. You just need to make sure you keep it in binary mode.
Okay, so just FTP them across.
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet.
As a final reminder to everyone, that is star one if you have a question today. And it appears we have no further questions at this time.
At this time, we conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. Hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Charlie, for presenting today.
Well, thank you, Elijah, and thanks, everybody, for attending.